Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. When you think about ska music, what's the first band that comes to mind? That answer probably varies greatly depending on when you first discovered the genre. But regardless of where you fall on the ska spectrum, you'll find a kindred spirit in Sacramento's Aaron Carnes. Aaron is a music journalist with a soft spot for ska, and that soft spot has birthed both a book and a podcast called In Defense of Ska. Aaron just released the second edition of his book and is currently doing a book tour in support of its second wave, and he joins us now. Aaron, welcome to Insight.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
When did you first discover and fall in love with ska?
1992, when I was still in high school. That's when I discovered it. I discovered a band. I live in Bay Area. I'm from the Bay Area. I saw a band called Skank and Pickle play in San Jose, and that was it. I was sold from then on for the rest of my life.
When I was listening to your podcast, I learned that you also performed ska music. You were in a ska band growing
up. Yeah, I did. I used to perform. I don't really play music anymore, but yeah, back in the 90s, I played in a band called Flat Planet. I was the drummer.
When did things transition from you performing ska music, but being a drummer, and then becoming a music journalist?
Yeah, I became a music journalist in 2009. And I was a writer. I was a fiction writer before that. And then I kind of was looking for ways to make a living writing. So I was exploring nonfiction. It led to journalism. And then I started writing for newspapers and magazines and almost exclusively started writing about music just because I have a lot of knowledge about music.
How do you describe ska to someone who can't describe it?
Well, I mean, from a very technical point of view, it's a bouncy Jamaican music that predates reggae, but it's been revived and mixed with all kinds of genres. So the version that people hear nowadays is probably a version that's mixed with rock, punk, soul music, but it all has that sort of bouncy, upbeat feeling to it.
Who are the founders of ska? Are there founders of ska?
Who invented ska is probably up for debate, but the originators who perfected it in Jamaica were the Skatalites. It's a group of musicians that they backed all the singers like Bob Marley and stuff, and then they were an instrumental band. They put out their own records. They were the best there ever was and ever will be.
When I was growing up, I think I was in middle school, and No Doubt came out with Tragic Kingdom. Yeah. I mean, would they be considered ska or ska pop?
So in the 80s, they were a ska band. And then once they put out Tragic Kingdom, kind of leaning into that, they kind of pulled away from ska, but they kind of have like, you know, hints of ska, but they came from the ska scene.
How about Sublime?
Sublime, similarly, they kind of came from the ska scene. They do a lot of stuff. They do reggae, ska, they do all kinds of stuff. Some of their singles are ska. A lot of it's more reggae-oriented.
Yeah, when it comes to ska and your soft spot for it, I mean,
yes.
You have a second edition of a book and a podcast. You also are a music journalist. What is it about ska that's so special to you?
Well, aside from the fact that it's just a style of music that I fell in love with at a young age, I also feel as a journalist, it's underrepresented. So there's a lot of room for me to interview people, tell stories, because I don't feel like a lot of people are. So, I mean, I like a lot of styles of music, but there's plenty of people covering a lot of the styles that I like.
When you are doing those interviews and learning about maybe what's misunderstood about ska, what do you learn? I mean, why do you think it's misunderstood?
I think it's misunderstood because a lot of people view it as like there's no substance to it, that it's just sort of fun, silly. But, you know, ska comes from a deep place for those of us who love it, you know, create it and listen to it. It's meaningful songs. You know, a lot of ska is political. Its origins are very political, and it continues to stay political. A lot of ska musicians write very personal songs. So I think a lot of people don't understand that just because the music sounds joyous and it's danceable and has horns, you know, it doesn't sound deep to a lot of people, but it is.
That reminds me of when you read an excerpt of your book. It was on KALW, and it was from guitarist Nate Albert from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. And it really struck me because he was saying that every comedy show or commercial that's meant to be funny uses ska as a core soundtrack. I mean, mentioning America's Funniest Home Videos, and that took me back to my childhood. But what he also mentions is that it kind of strips the most important elements of ska, and that ska is way more complex and deeper than what I think a lot of people think of ska. It's not as superficial as maybe generally people might think of the genre.
Yeah, and he cited an example in that excerpt as a song by Fishbone. Fishbone are one of the best American bands, in my opinion. Fishbone had a song in the 80s called A Party at Ground Zero. And I've seen it on a bunch of movies because it just has this like really, really fun sound to it. But the song and what he was saying was that the song was about, you know, like kind of the Cold War and, you know, nuclear war, kind of the threat that the people that grew up in the 80s felt. But a lot of people didn't gather that meaning from it because they heard the fun sound of the music.
So the lyrics get lost.
Yeah.
I think about punk music also and hip hop, which also can have political and social undertones, but I think that's more on the forefront. Why do you think ska hasn't received as much of that recognition? Is it because of the upbeat tones and the lyrics get lost, or is there more to it than that?
I think that's part of it, but I also think that the way ska became popularized in the 90s, it really encouraged that stripping of meaning to it because it sort of was a flavor of the month in like 95 to 97, maybe. And it was sort of viewed as this, hey, this is this great new music that's coming out of Orange County and all the kids with the funny hats are wearing it and they're all having a great time. So there wasn't a lot of education around it. I mean, and it's kind of weird to think that you need education to fully appreciate a music, but at the point that it became like the flavor of the month, at that point it had been existed since the 50s, late 50s in Jamaica. There was the second wave was in the late 70s in England. It had been around as an underground genre since the early 80s in the US. So there was a lot of history and a lot of context that led to it becoming this brief mainstream genre at the time. So, and I think, unfortunately, it wasn't really contextualized correctly. And then after it stopped becoming popular, it was viewed as this like, okay, it was this thing kind of came and went, sort of like swing. It's this thing that came and went, and now we're over it. And now we're still kind of like dealing with the baggage of that.
Ska's also been a big part of your life. When did you kind of get that spark or the light bulb go off to say, hey, I got to write a book about this, not only a book, but a podcast as well?
It had to do with being a music journalist. Somewhere in the course of being a music journalist, I was kind of more confronted with the reality of not only was ska not really taken seriously, that my profession in particular, music journalist, really didn't take it seriously. It was like music journalists love the most like esoteric, dark, you know, subversive kind of music typically. So, but ska, I think, was kind of viewed as the antithesis of what a music journalist would love or a critic would love. So I saw that particular gap existed, and I thought I could be a person who has an experience in music journalism to sort of present ska in the sort of depth that it requires.
And now you're on your second edition of the book. I really like the format of the book. I mean, of course, you have chapters, but within each chapter, it reminded me of a scrapbook almost. You have journal entries, you have photos, like a trip down memory lane. What inspired that?
It was kind of difficult for me to wrap my head around what I wanted to convey about ska and how I wanted to convey about ska, because there's history that dates back to the late 50s and it's ongoing. So I decided that I was going to piece it together in a sort of non-chronological way and kind of treat each chapter as a standalone piece, that each chapter was going to make its own unique point, and that as you read the whole book, when you read each individual unique chapter together, it would create a picture, and that picture was going to say, I am showing you why ska has value.
The fact that you have a second edition means the first edition was a hit and well-received. What kind of response have you received since the book first published, I think back in 2021?
So in 2021, I got a lot of good press right when it was released. Rolling Stone ran an excerpt. I was on NPR. What else? Stereo Gum, Washington Post, Esquire, GQ. So I got a lot of press and it did well. I'm on a publisher named Clash. They're out of upstate New York. They're an independent publisher. At the time, they had no distribution, no bookstore distribution. I think I was like their first or second bestseller. And there was another book released that month called Daryl, which was a kind of a weird novel. It was nothing like my book. That one also kind of like hit this sort of literary world really well. Like The Atlantic loved that book. So with my book and Daryl, it kind of put Clash into this like new level of indie book where they were able to get a distributor.
That's awesome. I mean, you saw a gap in the music industry and journalism and writing. You filled it and it was well received and you're just going on strong. And now you have a podcast with many episodes. You also sent us some music, correct? Bad Operation. Mm-hmm. I would love to learn about the band first before we listen to some of their music.
Yeah, sure. I thought it would be fun to send you a band that's new and maybe not known by people who aren't keeping up with ska. Bad Operation, they formed in, I think, 2019. So they're still a relatively new band. They're out of New Orleans. And they play, in my opinion, they play music that sounds more similar to like the late 70s two-tone ska, but kind of updated and you know, just current and stuff in their own ways. It's not mixed with punk rock and other stuff. It's very ska sounding. Soulful, it's got a nice groove to it, and I think they're probably one of the best bands right now.
Well, let's listen to Bagel Rooks.
Okay.
And that is music journalist Aaron Carnes. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. It was a treat.
Sure. Can I say one thing about Bad Operation?
Yes. Yeah, we got about 20 seconds.
That song is about, you know, like there's a very personal song about the singer dealing with addiction, coming out of addiction. And it sounds very cathartic. To me, that's kind of how I hear ska. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very emotional, an emotional catharsis.
Thank you so much, Aaron.
Thank you.
And the updated version of his book, In Defense of Ska, is now out. You can actually get copies locally here in Sacramento at Time Tested Books, as well as Wild Sisters. We also have more information online. That is it for Insight Today. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. If you want to learn more about our guests, capradio.org/insight. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow. Got this,